that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Oh, and Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find it flick that monster Boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Space.
Oh,
the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Boogaloo! Welcome back to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo! I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Happy to be talking to you. And today we are going to be talking about Flash Gordon. Oh yeah, cult classic Flash Gordon. And joining me to talk about Flash Gordon, I have Jim Kata.
All hail Emperor Ming.
Emperor Ming, yep. And next up, we got, let's see, Flak Jacket Hall?
What's up, Star Childs?
Star Childs. And then, moving on, we got Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations. May the tree stump always be in your favor.
Well, okay, why not? I don't know.
Flash Gordon, mixed with a little bit of, I don't know, that Hunter show.
Ewoks join the fight.
Let's move on now.
Duck Dynasty? Is that what you're going for? I could see that happening on Duck Dynasty.
Hey, Jack, do you have any trivia on Duck Dynasty?
That may be the one piece of trivia I don't have for this thing.
All right. Well, Nick, why don't you tell everybody all about Flash Gordon? Don't leave anything out.
Don't leave anything out.
That's right.
All right. For no apparent reason, Ming decides to attack Earth by fucking with our weather or destroying our moon or something like that. Luckily, one scientist figures it out, and luckily Flash Gordon crashes his plane into his house, at which point they all get into a spaceship and go defend the Earth with no weapons. Upon arrival on Mongo, the evil planet, they're immediately captured and brought in to see the ruler of Mongo, Ming, who seems to be holding court and taking the yearly tributes from everyone, because, you know, that's where you take the prisoners. You know, you want to expose the prisoners to as much diplomatic people as possible. And because everyone wants to fuck a human being, our humans are all, you know, separated and then escape with various factions, because everyone is horny for humans.
If we learned anything this season.
I don't know. I mean, Ming wants to make it with the girl. Ming's daughter wants to make it with Flash. So they all escape. It is ridiculous. It is fun. But subtlety is not really all that evident in this one. I still haven't figured out, like, where Flash and I'm just going to call her the girl, because she has no, you know, defining characteristics whatsoever.
Her name is Dale Arden.
It's like half hour to tell you it's Dale Arden, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. It really doesn't matter. They immediately fall in love. In fact, like, I think the third time he talks to her, he proposes.
It's pretty close to that.
Like, 15, like, they maybe spent a combined total of 15 minutes together. and then they're in love and he's proposing. It was unbelievable.
She's super possessive after like the first 8 minutes though of the time they spent together. That's like I would yellow flag that one. She got some issues if she's that possessive.
Although she seemed like she hated him before they got him on the plane when they didn't really talk.
Yeah, for sure. She looked at him with disdain.
I'd like to say it was a slow burn, but it was an immediate flip.
Well, there was a cutscene where they did interact, ran into each other at some place called, I think it was the Dark Lodge or something like that. And
the place they mentioned like 10 times, yeah. But we never see. Oh, okay.
How can you hate a guy that's got his own name on his t-shirt?
I believe that is.
Did I call for trivia?
Immediately.
Is there
a trivia on why his own name is on his t-shirt?
Oh, yeah. Not just because it's freaking awesome and Boogaloo as hell, but apparently, because, you know, he's a famous guy, football player for the New York Jets, as well. I'm sure we'll get into later.
Which he announces when they ask him his name.
Well, yeah.
Who are you?
And that's what
Flash
I
of the New York Jets.
That's what I meant. So apparently he's wearing that shirt because some fan, anonymous fan, sent him that shirt, and he's hoping by wearing it, he'll run into her and she'll reveal herself to him that she gave it to him. Yep,
that's awesome.
Any fans of the show? We can arrange a PO box if you want to send us shirts with our names on them.
That's what we do, you know. It's
so. I think the big question is for Jim here, for me, because you had, I think you said twice previously, tried to watch this film, but you've never watched it under a Boogaloo lens.
Yeah.
Did that change your experience?
Twice is probably a vast underestimation of how many times I've tried to watch this movie and never made it more than a few minutes. The Boogaloo lens worked a charm. It is an amazing thing that when you go in looking for totally different things than the average film viewer, you can get so much out of a movie like this. I have friends that love this film, that just adore this film, and I never got it. Like, it just never caught me. This time I was all in.
It's amazing. It is amazing. It is. Yeah, I mean, there's some films that if you watch under the Boogaloo lens, it won't be as good, but other films, definitely, it'll increase your enjoyment. It's right, rather looking at it from the right way.
Yeah, it's like when someone explains why a wine is good, and then you get so much more out of the wine. Only, you know, maybe they explain why the fortified wine is so good.
Well, there's no question that Flash Gordon is fortified.
It is the Thunderbird of comic strip movies.
Well, and it's not like a normal one of our movies because it is significantly bigger budgeted, and yet because it's so campy and clearly still not enough budget for what they wanted to do, it manages to become, and it wasn't successful except for in Italy and England, where we're monster hits, especially in England. But because of that, it's got this, it qualifies under the kind of that B schlocky feel, right?
Yeah. And definitely cult film. I mean, there's a big Blu-ray release of this movie. It's done well on, after the movie, after the theater, yeah. For sure.
In fact, there's a documentary coming out. Sam Jones actually produced it that, apparently is quite excellent. That's supposed to be coming out about his battles with Dino De Laurentiis and, kind of the difficulties. And it's apparently out on Blu-ray and video on demand in early March and late February in England. And from the festivals, it's supposed to be excellent. So I'll look up the name of that for you guys because I have all this trivia. I don't have that.
Well, and what a crazy time for De Laurentiis. Just the stuff he did within a few years.
Plus, he's crazy.
But I mean, within this, like, this is the halfway point between him making his King Kong and him making his Dune, executive producing Dune. So it's such a crazy, like, pop culture time for him.
And people who worked on this, like the scripts and stuff like that, worked on those too, you know, so... I mean, they're all connected in some way in that De Laurentiis universe.
Is it a shared universe, like crossover movies?
I think it might be.
That would be great, actually. I would love to see King Kong versus Ming versus Dune.
Yeah. Kong.
Yeah.
Was there some sort of tax credit program going on during this time? I mean, I can understand King Kong. You know, stuff just didn't work. But this particular movie, I see no route to profit with any of the decisions made in this movie.
Well, this would have been, this is only a couple of years after Superman. Like, I think they were probably just, much like now, just the past 10 years, scrambling for comic book or comic book adjacent things that you could turn into a movie.
Star Wars, obviously. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like trying to find the middle ground between Star Wars and Superman.
Well, because we know that George Lucas wanted to make Flash Gordon, but he couldn't get the rights, so he made Star Wars, which was probably a better choice.
but also the Batman TV series was also huge in reruns at this time, you know, and there's another campy comic book thing. Mm.
Yeah, kind of teasing out the 23andMe of this film, finding all of the ancestors of the film.
Well, it's just they went so overboard. It's so like when you've got that vision in your head of what a comic book movie was before Iron Man, really. I mean, it's that whole, like, big time, over the top, super colorful, you know, everybody's kind of crazy. So, yeah, I mean, Flash Gordon fits that bill to a T.
Yeah, there's a lot of decisions even, I guess it would be above the line. Like, let's get all the actors who can act and give them small roles. And the guys who don't, let's give them large roles.
How much had Timothy Dalton done at this point? Like, it's strange to me that Timothy Dalton, like, I mean, he looks exactly like he looked when he did Bond, like almost 10 years later.
Yeah, for sure. He I don't know that he looks that different now.
That's true. He looks exactly the same now.
His first Bond film would have been Living Daylights in 87, right? And this was 1980. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's not that long different, but I believe he was a stage actor already at that point, but I don't think he was, I don't think he was that well known.
Was he good in this, though?
Well, how good can he be in this? The director, Mike Hodges, called it a $27 million improvisation.
There's like a staggering quality of actors, like particularly stage actors, though. Like I stood up and started cheering when Topol came on screen. I had no idea Topol was in this.
Yeah.
He's just a ridiculously incredible performer. Also veteran of James Bond film. Brian Blessed, like some of the actors in this are just ridiculously good. But as you said, they're all the supporting cast, they're not the lead cast.
Oh, I mean, Brian Blessed just chews up scenery every time he's in the movie. I love that guy. Gordon!
That is, I was going to get everybody to end this episode by asking us ever all to try our best Gordon alive.
Yeah, he's so, like, I mean, you just need to hear his voice and it's just immediate recognition of who it is.
Oh yeah, no question.
The miniature work in this movie is really, really good. That's one of it's the practical stuff in this. It is like that transition period because Star Wars had changed things so much with how you made movies. So this movie starts incorporating some of the some of those things while it's still like doing that older thing of more miniatures and matte paintings. But you know, it starts doing rotoscoping a bit too. So it's an interesting bridge of the tech. There's some really good matte paintings once they get to the forest planet, the forest of moon.
That's the thing about this. This is a film much like it goes up there now with Planet of the Vampires and this and the original Suspiria movies where I want a 4K HDR print because the colors are really pretty amazing. And that's the thing. You talk about the matte work and these different things, the miniatures. There's times in this where you'll have an effect. Like, it often be in a movie, you'll have some great effects and some bad effects. But here you can have something that looks great and something that looks terrible in the same shot. It's pretty damn amazing.
I mean, what were they thinking with the snake people?
I know the frog guys. They are the worst. They're so bad with the painted on eyes and
they're standing beside this beautiful matte painting or a great effect or something like that, and you can see their eyes through in their mouths because that's the only place they put the slit for the. I hate the snake people.
I get it. They're like,
I don't like snakes. I hate snakes. That was the quote.
Why did it have to be snakes?
That was the quote.
Yes.
I landed on my head today, so that's my excuse.
You probably should get that looked at.
And did we ever go back for the Hawkman in the cage that was drowning?
That's a hell of a good question. There's something that we could use some information on. Like, that felt like there was either a scene before or a scene after, or perhaps both, that were missing where we introduced them.
It would have been great to have him there, you know, to bridge the rift between the two tribes. But no, Flash gets to the cage and leaves his buddy saying, I'll be back, and we never see him again.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there was supposed to be other tribes that we didn't see, some ice princess queen people. That's why there's some people in plastic standing in the background, like plastic coats on, and the lion men that were in the original, I guess, serial and stuff like that. So, but you know,
constraint. How about the square people? I spent a lot of time trying to figure out the people in the square outfits.
Yeah, I think they're just there for color. Oh, I think they're just.
I kind of thought we'd have a little bit of trivia on that.
No, we got no trivia on that. We got no trivia.
I laughed out loud when one of the little square people kicked one of the bad guys in the head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was good.
I love the little rebellion when that happens. It's, you know, when Flash is taken in front of Ming with his pals, and representatives from all of the repressed moons that Ming is lording over are there. And then whenever Ming's not looking, they just like kind of, they'll kick around the guards and they'll cause problems. And they're like, I don't know. Everything's fine. Everything's cool. We're all still your subjects.
But it is great because, I mean, he's football tackling them. He doesn't know any fighting techniques. But
no. In fact, he's getting his ass kicked until somebody throws him a helmet that sort of looks like a football.
That was great. Yes, Dale threw him a football.
And then Dale starts doing like cheerleading stuff, which apparently was improvised. I guess what a surprise. But yeah, no, I mean it's pretty incredible. Just like you say, I mean the fact though that Ming, like the script originally said. There's a point where Ming kills somebody and he says this guy's a psychopath or Ming is a psychopath or something. And originally the script was that Ming is merciless, which brings that in, but they changed it. And so he's like, who said that? And this robot, this floating robot thing goes the fair haired stranger or something like that. Right. And he goes, who are you? And yeah, that's when he steps up and he goes, Flash Gordon, quarterback, New York Jets. It's gotta be one of the all time Boogaloo lines.
I refer to his fighting style there, where he's using the helmet or whatever it is, and basically football blogging as football kata.
Yeah, a football kata. That's
much in the tradition of Jim Kata. It's incorporating the two things he's good at.
Well, I know what he's not good at.
Fighting and carrying a ball with one hand.
I just realized we need to find a guest host whose first name is football.
It's got to be in someone with a nickname.
Isn't that your brother?
And my brother's name is Tim. I love it. It only shows up a couple of times, but in that scene with in Ming's court, we see the flying metal hand that really jumps out after him, like tries to grab him. Like it's like a remote control flying hand. And then later, one of the characters is the princess is being held down while she's being tortured by four of these flying metal hands.
With, yeah, I know.
With They just thought it looked cool. I mean, that's a lot of this movie. That's a lot of this movie. Let's face it. Like a lot of those costumes, they said, do them all, and some will look cool, and some won't. And hopefully, people will only look good because there's some amazing costumes. And then somewhere you go, oh man. And the fact is, especially in as we have a high definition transfer and stuff like that out there, the fact that those costumes are plastic instead of metal. Like those costumes would have looked really cool. Some of those costumes from Ming's, you know, army
Ming's,
or whatever.
Ming's guards in the castle. Like their outfits change when they're out, you know, actually battling. But the ones in the emperor's palace or whatever, the red and gold samurai outfits.
Yeah,
those are amazing outfits.
Well, if they had been actually metal, I think it would have looked unreal. But the close-ups that you get unfortunately reveal that they're plastic. Also, the fact that you hear them clanging each other with plastic sounds.
Well, if that's a problem, I mean, yeah, typically they remove you know those kind of sounds and stuff like that. So do you?
I think there was too many to remove.
Yeah. So, do you have any? Let's talk about some information on Flash. Do you have any? Do you have anything good on Flash?
Flash or
Sam Jones. Let's go with Sam Jones.
Let's. There's about a billion on Sam Jones. Now, number one, Flash Gordon was cast as Arnold Schwarzenegger, and then last minute changed because of his accent. So that certainly would have made for a different film. And Dino De Laurentiis really wanted Kurt Russell, but Kurt Russell turned it down because he thought it was too campy. So they got Sam Jones, who was cast because Dino De Laurentiis' mother-in-law saw him on The Dating Game.
And he never worked again.
Almost. Like he left. I mean, he was getting into fights on the set. There's a book out there from about De Laurentiis that says that he got into fights on the set. At one point had a scar on his face, and the De Laurentiis showed up and told the doctors, just fix the scar. That's all. But, I mean, he didn't do the post-production work, so most of his dialogue is actually dubbed by an unknown actor, so which is hilarious because, I mean, I was going to make fun of his dialogue till I found that out. You know, and you still can, but it's one of those things where he left because he wasn't, like, out of payment. He wasn't getting paid. So, and he just, you know, I mean, yeah, his career went right down. That's why that documentary I mentioned, it's called Life After Flash, that's coming out. And I think it will be worth checking out.
Yeah, he worked quite a bit, but I mean, it was never, he never kind of got out of the single episode of Matlock kind of jobs.
I think
he was
the Highwayman for a couple of years. I think like a syndicated sci-fi TV show, The Highwayman. I think.
Oh, God, I loved that show. I don't remember.
Yeah, he was in that. And I think because also in that, wasn't that Oi Australian guy was part of that. And
Yeah.
So it was kind of a, you know, cheesy sci-fi 80s type. Is exactly what you think it is.
It was Knight Rider with a big truck.
Yeah, basically.
Ten episodes is what that was, one season. But Glenn Larson, created by Glenn Larson. All right, okay. We'll do our TV season.
I told you. It is what you think it is.
when we do our TV season,
I believe the first couple of episodes were edited into a movie if we want to do it.
He did do that great cameo in
next season now. Thank you.
He did that great cameo in Ted as Flash Gordon.
Ted and Ted 2. Well, as himself, but just as himself
as Flash Gordon. Yeah,
himself, like making it seem like he never stopped wearing the Flash Gordon outfit.
Well, did he?
And probably making $1 million a year off of comic conventions now. So
yeah,
he's back in uniform.
I'm happy with the fact that the girl who played Dale Arden was the female lead in Manimal. So that's
Melody Anderson.
Yes. That's
she's
hard,
now a she's now a like a guru for helping people with family addictions. So
You had my hopes up. I thought you were going to say travel agent.
No, she's actually quite successful as an author and everything like that in the self-help area.
Would you like to go to a Mongo?
Well, I'm still not
we
sure
have
how
flights
they got
leaving
there.
Hourly.
I'm still not sure how that ship actually got to Mongo. Like,
well, if you fly long enough through 1960s psychedelic oil paintings, you end up in Mongo City.
Good point. Good point.
Let's talk about how they got on that ship, or is that waiting for the WTFs?
No, I think we just go. Are we going to run out of WTFs later if we do it now?
No, we're not.
I think just go. I love. Yeah. So they're in a plane crash. They're the only two survivors of a plane crash, and they crash 3 feet away from the rocket ship that's going to leave Earth. Like, and not an exaggeration. They're like, they get out and basically walk right on to the rocket ship.
Here's the thing. The Zarkov needs another person to help press. It takes two people on two different sides, Dr. Zarkov, to press these red pedals to get this spaceship to go up. So the first thing he does is pulls a gun on his assistant to force him on the plane, who just runs off anyways. and then they land, and he's like, "Oh, are you guys all right? Yeah, we're fine. I bet you'd like to use my phone, wouldn't you?" They're like, "Yeah, it's right in here." And none of them go in the rocket ship. They just walk in like that's where a phone would be.
Well, in fairness, I wouldn't. It didn't look like a rocket ship.
But it
did. I was just in a plane crash. I might not be thinking all that straight.
I don't think Flash Gordon's thinking all that straight at any time.
No.
Some strange decisions over the course of the film.
Yeah, I mean, sure. you're expecting Flash to be like the smartest guy in the room. He's not.
But they get into the rocket ship and they're like, "You know, I don't think I see a phone. This is interesting decor." I'm like, "Guys, you're in a rocket ship."
Hey, they're busy falling in love.
Sorry, that was their third minute together. They were at this point. Yeah. We never found out if she's the one who gave them the shirt. Nothing. You would think, though, that she wouldn't have hated him so much at the very beginning then, though.
You got to leave some stuff for the sequel.
And they were going to do a sequel with it, yeah. You know, on Mars was the plan, but never happened.
It's a damn shame.
Mainly it didn't happen because Sam Jones, of course, walked out.
Well, that, and I don't think this movie was financially successful.
Because it was such a monster success, it was a $27 million budget. It did $17 million in the U.S. So it lost money there, but it did another £14 million alone in the U.K. So when you all put it all together, it actually doubled its production budget. Not a massive hit, but not, you know, it's just that it was a flop in the U.S.
Hmm.
It's not the way gross works, but go ahead. You've confused gross and net, but so does everyone else. We'll move on.
I didn't include all the other countries in the world, though. Like Italy, where it was also a hit because it had Italian actors.
I do love Ming's ship later too. Like the ship designs are so cool, and the kind of steampunk style of Mongo's. Like I really wanted to go back and compare the design of this movie to stuff that was in the movie serial and it actually in the comic strip, because it really looked like they had lifted stuff directly in the design and not just reinvented it.
I believe it was comic book artist Al Williamson who did a lot of that design. Yeah.
Hey, so for people who aren't comic fans, Al Williamson was the artist on the Star Wars comic strip. That would be the most famous thing he did. That's really cool. Cause yeah, it does have that like old comic strip feel of just the designs, like a lot of big flat spaces. But yeah, the scene later on in the film where the enemy ship gets boarded, and they have this like basically like the kind of battle you would see at sea, but it's in the skies. I dug it.
Yeah. No, I mean
no, that was a good ship. I mean it was a little too much like a hot dog, but
they all look a lot like.
Hey,
a
at least it didn't. At least it didn't look like breasts. You know, and there was one ship that looked like kind of like a mosquito or something, and like there was some pretty cool stuff in there. But you know, on the other hand, as much as the designs were pretty cool, there's no point where you're looking at it and go, boy, doesn't that look like plastic?
No, like that. I mean, this is one of the few sets that I just love to walk around. I wonder what the actors were thinking. Like, you know, you get there and everything's so impressive, and then they're handed these words.
And then you start to question what the hell you're getting
there's
into.
There's a disconnect between how much money is on this and the material.
No, it's true. Like, don't get me wrong, it's campy, so some of the lines are funny and they're meant to be, but some of them you're just grown. Like, they're just, it's just bad words to script. And of course, like I say, I mean, it was, you know, you're on Italy, you have English, or, you know, actors who speak English, a lot of, you know, people on the set who don't speak English. The script that was translated to people on the set was translated from English to Italian, and was given an example of if the script said a woman walks into a room, it would say along comes a cat. So this is true. And apparently Dino De Laurentiis, when they complained to him, he said, it's about the emotion. That's all. I care about the emotion of the story, not the words. So he's crazy. So
they use Google Translate.
The after hour orgies would have been amazing.
Unbelievable. It's Italy, right?
I mean, you spend the day dressed as a bird beside a square person and a frozen guy.
And keep
you
in mind,
they're fucking afterward. There's no way around it.
They have sex and then they immediately go to mass. but those bird people, they couldn't sit down, so they all had to lie in their stomachs in between because they couldn't sit down wearing that. Lying on their stomachs.
Great. So all the Hawkmen are bottoms, is what you're saying. dive.
did I tell you guys there was some trivia for this film? I mean, we're barely scratching the surface. That's unbelievable. Okay, so here's one last one, and we should get to scoring, otherwise we will be here. I'll just keep repeating trivia. But this one's too damn good. So originally, Mike Hodges, the director, he wanted to do Pink Floyd. He considered Pink Floyd to do the soundtrack. And eventually they ended up approaching Queen, and Queen was interested. So Queen's manager schedules an appointment or a meeting with Dino De Laurentiis, and he walks in and sits down. And Dino De Laurentiis, the first thing he says to him in his mouth is, "Who are the Queens?" He had never heard of them.
That's awesome. I watched this the same day I saw Bohemian Rhapsody. I was very disappointed that this is not mentioned.
That is disappointing.
they use a song from Highlander. They use a song from Highlander. Flash Gordon, not mentioned.
And Prince Voltan had the line, "Who wants to live forever?" in this movie.
That's which is the song that they end up using in Bohemian Rhapsody. And
unbelievable. Yeah, unbelievable.
Look at how it all ties together, and yet no respect.
No. Well, have we mentioned the Boogaloo?
For the source material that they should be. I mean, they spend a half an hour of Bohemian Rhapsody doing Live Aid. You think that something even more important, like Flash Gordon, more culturally groundbreaking and landmark.
I don't think there's one quote from Live Aid that anybody can recall. Yeah. Everybody knows Gordon's alive.
so many what the fucks. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate every movie in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category we call schlock appeal, and as always, we start with Stan.
Well, in this case, I would almost argue that the movie objects to quality, but this is a schlock monster, is what this is. It's got so much schlock. I mean, starting from all those costumes right off the bat, it is, for a person who had never seen the movie, it was absolutely shocking to be like, wow, look at all the money they spent on that. That is insane. So for that reason alone, I've got to go pretty high. So I'm going to give it an 8.
I'm going 9. If somebody needs to know the definition of schlock in a visual just like that, you point at the Flash Gordon poster or a single frame. I don't care where in the movie you stop it. Just point at the screen and say, that is schlock.
Yeah, that's fair. That is fair.
I got a solid 8. I wish I could do a 0.5 on this one. So I got a solid 8, though, because I agree. It's just so damn campy.
I also went high on this. I love your note of just jump to any point, because I imagine I could do that and just and it will always work. I'm going to go with a 9 as well on this category. All right, more heart than budget.
Now this is where the movie I would suggest falters. It's got a big time budget, and I mean, I'm not sure that De Laurentiis ever made a movie that had heart in it, but man, oh man, it's designed to be big and over the top, and it is absolutely that. But I can only go for a 3 because it's big and over the top.
Yeah, I'm only going as high as a 4 because I don't think anyone was in on the joke. Or got the joke, more importantly.
I think certainly, Zarkov. I forget the actor's name again.
Topol.
Topol, yeah. He clearly was, and some of them clearly were. I mean, again, it was big budget, $27 million. Not massive, but pretty darn big. But
well,
not
for
nearly
us, big.
Yeah, but not nearly as big as their desire. Like, they would have needed another 13, 14 million, 15, 16,
60,
maybe 11.
70.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not good. I'm not. Apparently, I don't know the difference between gross and anyway. So the point being that they didn't have enough money for what they wanted to do, but they just, like, a lot of the times they just said, we're going to do this, and that means that it's going to look great at times and it's going to look bad at times, but we're going to do everything we want to do regardless. And they just did it. And there's a certain sweetness to the movie and the characters and the performances. And you can watch it with your kids and everything. So I think it's got quite a bit of heart. I'm going to go with a 7.
All right. I'll split the difference here with a 5. IMDb lists the budget on this one as 20, and the budget of Empire Strikes Back, which came out the same year, was 18. definitely got.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Hey, I think your point has been negated there, Jack.
Yeah.
But I mean, they definitely go for it. I mean, in many ways, the sets are more elaborate than if we're going to compare it to Empire Strikes Back, came out the same year. A lot of the sets are more elaborate. There's not a great deal of space stuff, so the time's not being eaten up by the miniatures work. It is, it's mostly actors using some version of set, usually with a mat, like often with a mat. There's a lot of stuff on the screen for sure. And it's bright. Like, they don't hide stuff in the dark for sure.
I'm a 7.
You're a 7. I that's fine. I'm a 5. Okay, the next category, and God help you, what the fuck moments.
Holy Christ.
I'm going to mark them off my list as you guys pick them.
Well, the number one thing that I thought the first, like, was Queen. What the fuck did you decide? When somebody showed you a script, I assume they saw a script, and they started seeing things. It's just like, what made you think, yeah, I totally want to keep my music all over this thing? So yeah, they're my first real what the fuck moment, where it's just like, I mean, they're a great band. Which makes me question why they were involved. But
they do stick out in this. You think legendary Queen and Flash Gordon?
Yeah. Like, oh yeah. Yeah. It's like I mean I'm all over wanting to be involved with science fiction and stuff that.
No, I mean, let's look at it objectively. Queen is involved with two movie soundtracks, Highlander and Flash Gordon. obviously they didn't have great cinematic taste.
What?
I love both these films, but come on. They were batshit crazy in some regards, and I think this is just an example of it.
I wonder if we boogalooed up the Highlander series, what would score highest?
Well, Highlander 2 would probably score pretty high. But,
in WPF, for sure. Overall, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Flash Gordon, like, there really is so much. Like, it's almost undeniable that I can't even think of them all, because I probably should have made more notes, but it was just I would have just run out of paper.
Didn't you watch this like 20 minutes ago? Like, right before we went on air? You can't think of more.
This may have an impact on his memorable moments score.
No, I mean, there's a lot that I can remember
it's okay,
from
it's
it.
It's okay but, to just have one stand. It's like, yes. you don't have to have 8 or 10. Like, just the one is
well,
fine.
And I know that everybody else will, so I'm going to give it a 7.
You got WTF, Envy.
Only a 7 on WTF. This is a 9 all the way. I mean, the bad guy gets stabbed through the heart with a rocket ship.
Flash really knows how to crash on a dime. Doesn't he? Like, twice in the movie, he crashes a ship, and it's exactly where it has to be.
Hell of a pilot, that guy.
Yeah, hell of a pilot.
There's so much in this movie. The princess being horny for everybody is ridiculous. The father who just gives her sex toys.
I think you're confusing this with the next one.
I love that when they meet Dale, Ming says like, that Earth girl's really really attractive, and his sidekick there says, yeah, I think she might even be hotter than your daughter, which is such a psychotic thing to say. Well,
And they zap her in that scene with some sort of sex ray thing, don't they? Or what was that? I don't even know. I mean, there is so much in this movie. Like, there is not one scene that you can, like, feel confident you know what is going to happen or what just happened. So, yeah, 9 for the WTFs.
Yeah, there is a load in this one. Zarkov, there's a point where they mind wipe him. Ming and his people, they mind wipe him, and they show, like, his life, like, all his memories being pulled out of his brain, right down to the point where he is in the womb. And I don't know what you guys thought, but I thought his mother's vagina was surprisingly well lit.
Really, by that point, I was actually too distracted by the escaping the Nazis
there
imagery
is,
and trying to figure out, like, does the timeline line up here?
Not only does the timeline not line up there, let's not forget that in the same flashback sequence, there's a bit where a woman drowns, and then afterwards it shows him hugging her. It never explains who she is, so you think it's like a girlfriend or wife or something like that, and she drowns in a pool, and it looks like he might have murdered her. I can't...
It does. You're right.
Like he might have killed her, and then he's sad because he pushed her in the pool and she drowns or something, but it's in reverse, so technically he's hugging her because she's dead and then pushes her in the pool.
Which wakes her up.
The Ming, he gets like the ending of this movie. They manage. Prince Baron manages to get the force field down, right, and everything, along with Dale. I think, was she helping him? I think she was helping him, right? So they get the force field down that's protecting the palace, and he flies that ship in, as you mentioned, and the ship's fine, you know, and he walks out. He's selling the injuries, like he's a little bit hurt, but not too bad, because most people get out of a ship that crashes at 400 miles an hour into a plane just fine. And he gets out, and Ming basically goes to shoot him with this with his ring, and which brings up a good piece of trivia for, but I don't know if we'll get to it. But he goes to shoot him and nothing happens. And I'm like, why is nothing happening? Is it on the same, is it like the same thing as the force field? So Ming, the genius that he is, when it doesn't work, turns it on himself and tests it, and that's how he dies. And then the floating thing that we talked about earlier comes by and says, "You have saved," because him dying immediately turns off the Earth beam that's going to destroy Earth. I don't know why. Apparently, it's just if it's attached to his heartbeat or something.
I thought that stopped when Timothy Dalton destroyed the generators.
No, it didn't stop until Ming died. So then the floating thing comes by and, "Congratulations, Flash. You have saved the Earth. Have a nice day." And then they end the movie by Flash Gordon looking at the camera and jumping towards it and going, "Yay!" Because they had to improvise an ending. They had no idea how to do it.
It was a classic ending.
It's a classic ending. And then maybe my very favorite thing is the Prince Aura. She's sitting there and she's having a gentle moment with Prince Baron, because they're supposed to be with each other, and then he doesn't know if he can trust her or not, and this and that. And she says to him, "Go away, I'll follow later." And they kiss gently, and he takes her gently and holds her hands in his face and says, "You lying bitch." I was going to give it an 8. I'm up to a 9. That's just the ones that are coming off the top of my head.
You know what's astounding is we did 3 rounds here of people saying they're WTFs, and none of the ones that I had listed came up. I don't think that's ever happened. I've got a mess of them. I'm like, oh well, someone will get to these. Off the top, Ming and his guy are talking about how they're going to destroy the Earth because, you know, why not? And they say, the people that live there call it the Earth. And he kind of like air quotes, they call it the Earth. And then immediately Ming presses a button that says in big bold letters, "Earthquake."
Yeah.
So if Earth was a weird word.
Yes. I liked hot hail. That hot hail was my favorite.
Anywhere. Earthquake would only work on Earth, as you just right. found out.
Yeah, I mean, you can't do a Mongo quake. Like,
no.
that's a very specific use button you got there. Like, goddamn, I was wondering if I was ever going to get used to this button, but finally we found this place called Earth. That must be what it's for.
It's a fantastic one.
In the wedding, I you know, there's people give Ming a lot of stick for I mean, sure, he Bill Cosby's his girlfriend. He forces her to get married to him. He does, however, vow not to blast her into space. Until he's tired of her. That's in the wedding vows. But he is so respectful of her roots that he includes the Earth wedding march in their wedding ceremony. Like, you know, that's touching. It's really, I thought that was a really touching moment that I was going, why the fuck is this song playing? is this one of those, like, it's just universal? Like, this song is always the wedding song in every culture. But my favorite, Ming, after just summarily killing tons of people whenever they bug him for any reason, decides that he's going to put Flash Gordon in a James Bond murder cell and poison gas him. Instead of just hitting him with his ring and vaporizing him. So he does that. Of course, they find a way to get Flash out of this. They fake Flash's death. So Flash, he's given a whole room dedicated to his coffin to honor him for, you know, he was such a great opponent, I guess. But Ming has a plaque made that says, "Flash Gordon Earthling, executed by Ming," and Flash's name is in the font of Flash that is on his own t-shirt.
Well, in fairness, they did give him a Flash t-shirt at, like, after he came back to life. There's a t-shirt that he's wearing with the lightning bolt on it in the Mongo colors. And I'm like, wow, they really like this guy.
Oh, man, can I give another couple? Now,
yeah, I'm going to give it a 9 and then we can come back and you can, yeah, keep going. Keep going.
Let's keep in mind, one of the amazing WTFs about this film for me is no matter what's going on, Sam Jones' hair is feathered perfect. No matter what's happening, it's amazing every time. I mentioned that Zarkov losing his memory, they mind wipe him. And later on, when he's rescued, they're like, oh, you were mind. He's mentioned being mind wiped. They were mind wiped. And they ask him why it didn't work. And he's basically like, well, because I didn't want to let it work. Like, that was...
He's like, I just thought of math or something. Like, yeah.
No, he thought of the Beatles.
And Einstein.
Him under, his quote was, please, not my mind. It's all I have. I spent my entire life trying to fill it. But apparently the theory of this is just to say this won't work. And that
whole thing was an homage, I think, to the original serial where Zarkov was sort of a dick that betrayed everybody.
There you go. Yeah, this was something. This movie is something. Let's go on to memorable moments. Is that the next one?
Memorable moments is next.
Well, obviously, that we know that there's a couple of Gordon alive, obviously very memorable. And there's no doubt that that as you guys mentioned to me the last episode, the Queen, the Flash, oh, you know, that's super memorable. You're never going to forget that. You're never going to forget the look of this movie because it's so blasted, over the top, crazy, insane, colorful. So I think it's going to be a pretty memorable movie overall. I'm going to give it an 8.
Yeah, I think 8 is the right score. I mean, how do you forget some of the quotes in here? Flash Gordon, New York Jets. Ming is a classic archetype. I just love looking at him. Yeah, 8. It's a great, memorable movie.
Yeah, I mean, I saw this as a little kid, and yet I still had memories of the look. That was really what I remembered. I mean, everybody remembers Gordon.
Oh, you're not going to remember Story from this movie.
No, but you remember. I remember the look of Ming, you know, and God bless Max von Sydow for that role. Apparently, that outfit weighed 70 pounds, so he could only stand in it for little periods at a time. Yeah, I mean, the look of the characters, like the look of the film, that bright. A lot of red and that the color scheme just sticks in your mind. The song, the opening sequence when they use the original strips is really, really cool. And I'm just going to say sequences like this, I'm going to give it from the beginning. Zogi, the high priest, do you, Ming the Merciless, ruler of the universe, have this earthling Dale Arden to be your empress of the hour? The Emperor Ming of the hour, yes. Do you promise to use her as you will? Certainly. Not to blast her into space? He glares at Zogli. Ming glares at him. Oh, until such time as you grow weary of her? I do. Dale Arden, I do not. This is tremendous stuff. This is a type of scene I will remember for the rest of my life. Will just stick with me. So friggin' amazing and campy and over the top. It was awesome. 9.
I think the aesthetic is what will stick with me. The habitat by the 80s became like to make it dark so you could cover up the rough edges, and everything's so bright in this movie. Like, there's almost no scenes that take place in a dark space.
And you see the rough edges because of it, but that's part of what makes it memorable.
Yeah, and I mean Brian Blessed and the Hawkmen are just amazing. Everything about them is so great.
I mean, here's a movie that only made $17 million, but the cultural impact, so much more. Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm giving this a 9. Our final category we'll call Crazy Concept.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting one, right? Because, I mean, Flash Gordon by itself, it's a crazy concept. The fact that you're doing a movie that's basically going to try to, you know, come off the Star Wars thing and be a space movie. Not that crazy, but ultimately what they did with it is absolutely batshit crazy. And the fact that they also wound up, you know, going so overboard and really going for that camp Batman 60s TV show. So I think that I would have to say that this is pretty fucking crazy. So I'm going with a 7.
Cocaine was at the height during this era.
Good times.
Yeah. I'm going to go with an 8. You know, I can almost see the logic on paper, how this could be a big film. But there are so many points somebody should have gone, wait a minute. And they didn't. They just kept full on gas. So 8. It's insane.
Well, I mean, that's exactly it. It's that this is, like, if you look at the concept of Flash Gordon, then it's no more crazy than Buck Rogers or John Carter, or all the characters. Like, there's so many of the characters of this era in so many ways, and this concept isn't. It's this particular adaptation and what they decided to do with it that's crazy. And the fact that De Laurentiis wanted this campy feel, everybody fought him on it. I mean, everybody. It ended up having 9 different directors attached because everybody had a different vision besides the campy but him. And when it failed at the box office, it was because fans hated it. It found an audience later, but the fans at the time who were fans of Flash Gordon hated it because of this. You know, it was so far from the source material in that direction. I mean, Flash Gordon's pretty serious. So that's what's crazy. Now, I'm not going to go as high as you guys because the actual concept itself of Flash Gordon isn't that crazy. But I'm going to go with a 6. But yeah, it's. I mean, it's not a 1.
Hell's no.
Yeah, I think it's given the timing of it and everything, like it like Nick said, a lot of it makes sense on paper, but then when you start kind of like, well, what do people like about Star Wars? That it's campy? No, that's actually not a word anyone ever used to describe Star Wars. So Superman, campy? No, again, like that's not a thing. So
Luther is.
Luther is, but he was in a totally different movie than the rest of the cast.
That's true.
So yeah, I'm gonna go. Yeah, I'll be a little more reserved, but I'll second Jack's 6 on this one. All right, so that brings us to the secret modifiers. Every season, we have 6 secret modifiers that alter the final score.
Episode 7. Doesn't everybody know them by now?
Well, especially in this case, since we have announced every one of them,
we have used everyone now. But you have to listen to every episode. It's like the asshole wouldn't. Yeah, this is like the secret code on the old radio serials. Like, you've got to listen to everyone and keep track of all of the modifiers. So by the end of the season, you'll have the full
this
list.
This is our remember to drink your Ovaltine.
Yeah, exactly. we can send you the decoder ring. Just call in $4.99 decoder ring. This film has 2 of the secret modifiers. It does gain a point for having an original score. The modifier we call Williamstown, and it does lose a point for being longer than 95 minutes, being 1 hour and 51, the longest film we have done thus far on The Search for the Ultimate Bee Movie.
Now, does it not get one for the frog people having ugly costumes, like rubber costumes?
Mm.
It was really more nylon, wasn't it?
They were, but I think the spirit of the modifier was that they're ugly, bad.
The rubber suits modifier is what we call it. It's not rubber, but it is like it is ridiculously obvious. Judges say yes. So 3 of the modifiers. Unfortunately, that was not an additional. That was a negative. so that loses it a point, which brings us to a quite awesome final score of 73 out of 100, which I believe puts it in the top 10 of films we've done so far.
And is that number 1 for the season now?
That'll easily number one for the season, and that'll put it at tied for number nine with Elves from our Christmas season. I had
made the prediction last episode before even watching them, and again earlier today in a conversation with Stan that these two films would finish top three in the season. So I'm glad to hear that this did do so well.
This is number one. It just scrapes ahead of Star Crash, which is 71.5.
Well, I mean, understandable. It's got some crazy to it. It's got some boogaloo in there.
But Stan, I'm wondering, you'll announce the next movie, and does anybody think it can challenge?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I haven't watched the next movie yet. But the next movie is that we are wrapping up our Astro Nuts season with is Flesh Gordon. We are not straying. Are we straying too far from the path? Oh, I don't know. But yeah, from flesh to flesh. So we just really wanted to get the full depth and breadth of everything that we could with this series.
All of the Gordons.
Oh, the Gordons. All of Gordon.
Flash Gordon, Gordon from Sesame Street. We're doing every Gordon.
Gordon Ramsay, all of them. So I don't know. I think it's also going to be very interesting to see what it scores. Now I want everybody's best Gordon alive. Brian Blessed. Prince, what is it? Voltron.
I get a cold. This might actually give me an advantage.
Sam?
Gordon? Alive?
Nick? Gordon? Gordon? Alive?
That's pretty goddamn good. Man, that right there, Jim, was pretty damn good.
Gordon alive?
That's not so good.
That was terrible.
No, I went too deep.
Yeah,
and growly.
Yeah, don't go for Brian Blessed. Don't go for Voltan. Go for Boss Nass. That's where. That's how you dial it in.
That was really good.
I think I need more joy.
Yes. Yeah, you need a big smile when you say that.
I did like fighting the beast anger when I should have, you know, a joyous celebration of victory. Yeah. How about yours?
Gordon, alive?
It's all right.
There we go. Well, I don't want to tell you how many times I did that today. And not because I was practicing, just because I can't stop doing it now.
Just because you wanted to have fun.
And how many times that I sang Flash
God. It's got to be an insane amount. An insane amount.
Yeah, I've been substituting other things.
Well, let's get out of here so Stan can go watch Flesh Gordon, because if this doesn't score 69, I'm going to be super angry.
How do we game it?
How do we game it? Those modifiers are going to have to come in. We game it so we get a 69 out of this.
That'll be a classic score. Classic score. All right, Jimbo, why don't you tell everybody where they can find us on the internet?
Instagram, Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Website, wetalkpodcasts.com, the home of the Octagon. Facebook and Twitter, We Talk Podcasts.
And the Octagon is what?
The Octagon is the ongoing record of our search for the ultimate B movie, which has a set of links to every episode we've done. It also allows you to sort the films in ascending or descending order in each of the five categories and their final total.
Sounds fancy.
It's fantastic. You wouldn't believe how many times I use this thing.
All right. Well, as you all know, Flesh Gordon is the movie that we are wrapping up season 5 Astro Nuts on. So I am looking forward to watching it. And I know that all the rest of the guys have either watched it or are looking forward to it as well. Or maybe watching it again. I'll be
watching portions of it again, yeah.
Yeah. And also, at the end of next episode, we will all announce our two movies to the other guys who don't know it for what they'll be doing for the following season on sequels.
That's right. Son of Boogaloo coming up next season. And next episode, we're going to find out what movies we're watching. Oh, the horror. But anyways, thank you for listening. So for Jim, for Jack, and for Nick, I am your host, Eighth Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Gladys, I'm bored. What plaything can you offer me today?
An obscure body in the SK system, Your Majesty. The inhabitants refer to it as the planet Earth.
I like to play with things a while before annihilation. Pathetic Earthlings! Who can save you now? Flash!
Strange object imaged in the Imperial Vortex.
Remove the Earth Woman. Prepare her for our pleasure.